From KTOO, I'm Katie Anastas. The Senate failed to pass a budget today, leaving a narrow window of time for a last-minute budget deal before the end of the regular session tomorrow evening. The two chambers are hoping to avoid a special session, but have been split over the size of the permanent fund dividend and whether to dip into state savings. Republican-led House leaders have proposed a $2,700 PFD that would require a large draw from state savings. The bipartisan majority Senate has favored a more modest $1,300 PFD that doesn't require dipping into savings with current oil revenue projections. Bill Wilikowski, an Anchorage Democrat, says the PFD has been the main topic of discussion.
Yeah, I think we want as big a dividend as possible. The question is, how do you pay for it?
Senate President Gary Stevens, a Republican from Kodiak, says the leaders of both chambers hope to meet again Tuesday evening to come up with a deal so that the Senate can pass the budget to the House tomorrow.
We're hoping to hear from the House between now and tomorrow's meeting and hoping we find a compromise that we can all live with.
This afternoon, the Senate adjourned without voting on the budget. With only a day left in the session, agreeing on a budget through a conference committee is no longer an option. The only way the legislature can pass a bill by midnight tomorrow to fund the government is if the House votes to approve the Senate's budget. If the chambers come up with a deal and the Senate advances it, the House could approve the bill tomorrow in what's known as concurrence. The House and Senate haven't concurred on a budget since 1982. If a deal fails, Governor Mike Dunleavy would likely call the legislature into a special session. It's unclear when that would happen and how many days it would last. This summer, the public television program Alaska Weather is going off air after 47 years. The program broadcasts daily weather updates to some of the most remote places in the state. Without it, meteorologists and emergency managers fear they're losing a vital way of reaching people. KTOO's Anna Canny has more.
On any given evening, you might hear this song coming from a television set in rural Alaska.
Welcome to the Alaska Weather Show.
Alaska Weather, the 30-minute program, is produced through a partnership between Alaska Public Media and the National Weather Service. In a daily broadcast, meteorologists deliver a wide range of statewide weather updates, including an aviation forecast and a marine forecast. It's long been one of the most far-reaching sources of weather information in the state. Meteorologists like Carrie Hastley have relied on it to communicate with some of the most remote rural and tribal communities in Alaska.
That TV option exists in way more places than any other single form of media.
But Alaska Public Media has decided to stop production of Alaska Weather. Chief Content Officer Linda Way says that decision came down to finances.
We didn't want to end that legacy, but ultimately it is a business decision. We couldn't continue to do the program with the limited resources that we have on hand. It just wasn't sustainable anymore.
According to Alaska Public Media, the show demanded hours of daily editing time and an annual budget of about $200,000. The show will move to YouTube after a final broadcast at the end of June, and that transition raises concerns. For the Weather Service, public television has been a well-understood and wide-reaching network. KTOO 360 TV in Juneau can deliver weather information across Southeast. KUAC in Fairbanks spreads it across the interior. And the Alaska Rural Communications System, a free state-owned satellite network, filled in the gaps for more than 200 rural and tribal communities. And though internet and cell service across the state have grown, there are still many places that lack high-speed internet. According to meteorologist Don Moore, the internet in Alaska is not yet an adequate replacement for TV.
The internet does not come free. So when there's a TV show that they can watch, it comes free of charge in that way. At least you don't have to worry about paying for internet or having a certain amount of data to watch the show every day.
But without the TV show, the Alaska Weather Service will be left to take stock. There are other ways they can reach people, but all of them have limitations. Their phone line, for instance, isn't as nimble in emergency situations, and NOAA Weather Radio can reach radio stations during emergency weather broadcasts. But there are major areas that it doesn't cover. In the short term, it's not clear how those gaps will be filled. But one thing that could help is making Alaska Weather's future format more adaptable.
Short segments, a minute or two, more bite-sized updates on what the weather's doing.
In its new format, Alaska weather will likely be broken down into three separate segments: a public forecast, an aviation forecast, and a marine forecast. Practically speaking, those short videos are just easier for the Weather Service to produce on their own. But they also might be more convenient for TV shows to air between programs. And Haisley hopes that that format will also help the Weather Service to keep up with the growing importance of social media networks like Facebook and Twitter.
We do recognize that as people change the way they consume media, that we need to change the way we deliver information. And this is an opportunity to really look holistically at how we do that.
But most of all, the end of Alaska weather highlights an urgent need for more information. The Weather Service has launched an outreach campaign to learn more about how Alaskans get their weather. That includes a public comment period that's open between now and July 30th. Find out how to submit your comments at ktoo.org. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
New genetic analysis from an ancient human bone fragment supports thousands of years of existing Tlingit oral tradition, making a DNA connection between Tlingit people today and their ancient ancestors living on the coast 6,000 years ago. KSTK's Sage Smiley reports.
It doesn't take a huge archaeological discovery to look deep into the past. Sometimes all it takes is a piece of bone 2 fingers wide.
If I had to summarize it in one sentence, I would say that the Tlingit people have been in their home territory for a hell of a long time.
Albert Akil is a fourth-year doctoral candidate at the University at Buffalo in New York. He's the lead author of a study published recently in the journal iScience.
The results are consistent with some of the oral traditions that the Tlingit people hold. For example, they place themselves at the eruption of the Mount Edgecombe. And we know from geological data that that last happened 4,500 years ago. And we're saying that the Tlingit people have been here for at least 6,000 years, so it's very consistent.
It's just wonderful to have our oral histories now confirmed by science.
Ashtin Esther Reese is the administrator for Wrangell's tribal government. She's also named as an author in the study.
It's upholding what we've known. We've been on this land since time immemorial, and we have our oral histories, and we know them to be true. And findings like this just uphold the fact that those histories are extremely accurate.
The study focuses on a fragment of bone that's about the size of a slice of banana. It was part of the humerus bone in the upper arm of a young woman who lived around 3,000 years ago. It was found in Lawyer's Cave on the mainland just across from Wrangell. Akil explains the fragment was part of a collection of bones taken from Alaska by a South Dakota geologist around 20 years ago. Researchers at the time thought it was from an ancient bear, but basic DNA analysis proved otherwise. In 2019, when Akil's professor found it was a piece of human bone, they reached out to Wrangell's tribe to ask permission to study the fragment.
And we said, hey, we have found this bone. Number one, is it okay if we study it? And number two, if it is okay, then would you like to give this bone a name?
The tribe agreed and decided on a name,
which was Tetukikishewat, which literally means young lady in a cave.
Reese, the tribal administrator, says she feels that scientific approach was completely appropriate and a respectful way to go about doing research.
To reach out to the tribe, to request permission, to keep the tribe updated was just an excellent example of what collaboration can be.
To study the bone fragment from Tetukikishewat, Akil says it took a little bit of powdered bone and a lot of computer analysis. That led him to the conclusion that the 3,000-year-old fragment of bone is most closely related to the coastal indigenous people of southeast Alaska and Haida Gwaii, the Tlingit, Haida, Tsimshian, and Nisga. It wasn't as closely related to indigenous people living in the interior of modern-day British Columbia.
So based on that, we can say that the interior peoples and the coastal peoples had diverged or moved away from each other at least 3,000 years ago. So we know that 3,000 years ago, a certain people were living in southeast Alaska.
Looking at previous research, Akil says the genetic connections can be made even further back in time, showing that ancestors of indigenous people living in southeast Alaska have been in the region at least 6,000 years. Akil says there isn't much more that can be studied in the fragment of bone from Tetukikishewat.
Our next step would be to return the remains to the community, so that they can rebury their ancestor with all the ceremony and ritual that it entails.
While there's no timeline for repatriation yet, Tribal Administrator Reese says tribal staff and members visited Lawyer's Cave with the Forest Service last summer to see where Tetukikishewat was found. They also found a piece of obsidian. It's natural to the nearby Stikine River and indicative of trade between clans. More evidence for what Reese and other residents already knew, that they live on the same lands their ancestors have stewarded for thousands of years. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.